Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. The popularity of pets, today on Advanced. Hello, listeners. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Peter, and you are joining us today, Thursday, May 7th, 2026, for the second day of our pets article for the month of May. It is called Lasers for Kitty. A rise in pet ownership leads to a wider variety of healthcare options. And as we learned yesterday, the title, Lasers for Kitty, is referring to laser treatment that is available for cats and dogs at this healthcare business in Boulder and Denver, Colorado. It's called Walking Paws Rehab. Paws, you know, the feet of a cat or a dog. Walking Paws Rehab in Boulder and Denver. It offers, among other things, laser treatments for the recovery of cats and dogs. And so we will read through day two of our article today. We'll talk about the vocabulary, talk about the ideas, give you a chance to practice listening to English. And by we, of course, I do mean myself and my co-panelist returning from yesterday. Please welcome back to the studio, Rhonda. Hello, Rhonda.
Hi, Peter. Great to be here. Hello, listeners. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, we're glad to have you guys with us as well here. Rhonda, talking a lot about pets and healthcare yesterday, what in particular, what idea or even what word stood out to you, still stands out to you today?
Sure. It combines the outstanding word and the idea. This example I'll give. I liked supine feline. Supine laying flat on your back, on your spine, and feline being the category of the animal.
No pun intended.
Oh, the category. Good one, Peter. C-A-T, category. Okay, Peter, supine feline. You love words. I love words. You and I talk a lot about just how fun and interesting words can be. And in this case, supine feline was a fun choice that our writer made at the beginning of the article yesterday to describe the almost elegant way the cat is being treated. She could have just said, the cat was on its back.
Right.
But instead, the supine feline, even when you say it, you sort of use a little bit of an elegant voice. It's the author's way of having fun describing how well-treated this cat is. I like that because it really gets us into this next part that we're going to read. What motivates people to treat their pets so well is one of the things we're going to talk about.
Right, right. And that touches on something that stood out for me yesterday from the article. We learned about Walking Paws Rehab and how they offer both conventional and holistic forms of pet rehabilitation to help pets recover from injuries. Holistic meaning a treatment of sort of both the body and the emotions, the mental state of the creature with the injury. Conventional rehabilitation services would just treat the site of the wound and not really worry about what music is playing at the time or how calm the animal is or is not. But in a holistic treatment, those things are taken into account as well. And how this all aligns, this all corresponds to this increase in financial devotion by Americans to their pets. We had these very interesting statistics yesterday about how consumers spent more on pet-related purchases than they did on recreational reading materials, which is to say books that you read for fun. They spent more on pet-related purchases than on alcohol, which was mind-blowing to me. And they spent more than on pet-related purchases than they did on women's clothing. These three categories that you would think are normally at the very top of how people spend their money, their leisure money, as it were, and pet-related purchases are above all of them. So we get this idea of pets becoming an increasingly important part of Americans' lifestyle and possibly of people elsewhere in the world as well. So we will unpack this idea more today. We'll catch up with our cat ruffian who is receiving the lasers. She is the kitty in the title, receiving the laser treatment. And we will do two readings, beginning with our first reading. Let's go into that reading now.
When we ask about the amount of money people spend on pets, it usually implies that there are better ways to spend money, said Leslie Irvine, a University of Colorado Boulder sociology professor who has studied people's relationships to animals for nearly 20 years. People spend huge amounts of money on all kinds of things, hobbies, cars, golf, but if it's animals, it's kind of denigrated as silly because they're just animals. In fact, Irvine said, research shows people who spend money on their pets are happier buying their furry friends a gift than treating themselves or other humans. A happy patient. Judging by the way Ruffian melted into Walking Paw's fur pillow, he was pretty happy with the gift of massage too. A few years ago, the Maine Coon cat was diagnosed with medial humeral epicondylitis, a condition in cats in which mineral deposits develop around the elbow joints and can cause pain. Ruffian's owner, Carly Forrest, joked he had kitty golfer's elbow. Ruffian had surgery to treat his condition and went to Walking Paw's rehab for recovery. The cat got muscle strength back through underwater treadmill exercises that allowed him to walk without as much pressure on his recovering elbow.
Okay, so in our first section here, we meet Leslie Irvine. And we mentioned yesterday, we met someone yesterday named Carrie Kilgannon, who works at the Walking Paws Rehab Center, and noted that there are times, and this article is an example of that, where the gender of the person being focused on is not that clear. The name Carrie, and now here the name Leslie, could apply or has applied historically to either a man or a woman. So we'd like to apologize up front if we misgender these people that we're talking about. We'll try to refer to them in gender-neutral terms. Anyway, Leslie Irvine, a University of Colorado Boulder sociology professor, has an interesting quote right up here at the top. Rhonda, what is that?
She says, or he says, when we ask about the amount of money people spend on pets, it usually implies that there are better ways to spend money. I think this is a great statement. Now, Leslie Irvine is a sociology professor, so the study of social habits of people, you could say, is their specialty. So when just to ask that question, how much do people spend on their pets, seems to suggest a critical attitude, as though people need to defend why they're spending money. They go on to say people spend huge amounts of money on all sorts of things that aren't necessary. Their hobbies, cars, golf. We generally don't question that.
Right.
Why are you spending money on your hobby of painting?
Mm.
But if it's animals, this professor is saying it's kind of denigrated as silly. So denigrate is to say things, to put it down, to make criticism. So it's kind of criticized as silly, foolish, because they're, and notice the quote marks around the last two words in the paragraph, they're just animals.
Yeah.
A big impression that this professor has that people, when we've talked about pets, people have different attitudes. Some people think that's foolish to spend so much money on an animal. I love the key word in this paragraph, which is relationships. This part of our article is going to focus more on the important relationship that you have with your animal. And I'm looking at you, Peter, and smiling because I know that your dog is an important relationship.
sure,
in your
sure.
life, and that's a beautiful thing and that I want to hear you comment on.
Well, yes. No, we have a dog, and my wife and I, and we do spend a fair amount of money on her food, on healthcare for her, and it's, you know, we notice it. You know, it's not just, it's a significant enough amount of money that we notice it, and so we have to take it into account and be wise in how we spend money on our pet, but it is money that we consider worth spending, absolutely. It's, in fact, you, Rhonda, mentioned yesterday that when you were younger and your children were younger, that one of your, you had a cockatiel, a special bird. Were you aware of spending much money on the cockatiel in terms of its care?
Well, we didn't have to spend much money. You buy bird seed, but you're not buying necessarily toys, or we didn't have her long enough to have to need a veterinary. We talked about the veterinary yesterday as the kind of medical doctor who takes care of animals.
Right.
So no, this was not an issue for us spending money.
Okay. But the next paragraph here says, in fact, Irvine said, research shows people who spend money on their pets are happier buying. Now, this is interesting. People who spend money on their pets are happier buying their furry friends, buying the pets a gift, than they are treating themselves or other humans. This is just one line here, but that is a very significant thought, that people who spend money on their pets are happier from doing that than they are happy treating themselves or other human beings. Rhonda?
I think a key there to understanding it is the phrase in English, furry friends. We do use that a lot, and what we mean by that is an affectionate feeling towards your animals. That's why we would say, my furry friend. Mm-hmm. It's a fun phrase. It's common for us to refer to animals that are pets that way, my furry friend, fur.
Yes.
It has fur. I think it's a very good insight. I suppose because an animal will always be grateful. You know, some if you buy something for yourself, it's a little selfish. If you buy something for another person, you're not sure they'll like it, or maybe you've got some motive. But with a pet, am I right, Peter, that with a pet—
I would agree with that, yes. And the pet may not actually say thank you.
Right.
But we can easily imagine the pet is grateful because the pet is kind of a blank slate, because it's a simpler creature. And now you can begin to see how this can cut both ways. It is, I think, one of the reasons for the rise in pet popularity, why pets have always been popular, but particularly nowadays, is because we are able to project onto them what we would like to be true about them, and they cannot contradict that.
Mm.
Unless, you know, by their behavior, they obviously do it, like if they run away or something like that. But most of the time, we're able to project onto them a story of what they're thinking, what they're feeling, what they would say to us if they could speak. And that's not to denigrate pet ownership in any way, but it is something to keep in mind when we think about how much pleasure our pets get from us. Partly it's because the pet cannot contradict that.
You said how much pleasure.
If we get pleasure buying something for a pet,
yes,
we can safely assume the pet is happy with it in some way. The pet will never say, oh, I've got one already. The pet will never say,
I don't like the color.
Oh, is this how you think of me? The pet will never give like a human response, because it's not human. It's an animal. It can't communicate with that way. It can't even think that way. Anyway, we're getting off onto a little digression here. But judging, just to go on to our, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's good. You and I both have a lot to say. I think going on, we see a discussion of how this pet seems to feel, judging by the way Ruffian just melted, just relaxed into the pillow. He was pretty happy with the gift of massage. So this cat seems to be very content.
Right. When you melt into something, it means you're very relaxed and you almost turn into a liquid because you are so comfortable. And this cat, Ruffian, just melted into this fur pillow that he was on. The Ruffian, the cat, as we go on to read, was diagnosed. It's a Maine Coon cat. That's the breed it is. I couldn't tell you anything about the Maine Coon cat. I don't know cats. I don't know really that much about dogs, but that's the type of cat it was, and it was diagnosed with medial humeral epicondylitis. which, as we're thankfully told, is a condition in cats in which mineral deposits develop around the elbow joints and can cause pain. Ruffian's owner, Carly Forrest, jokes saying that Ruffian had kitty golfer's elbow. If our readers out there are fans of golfing, they perhaps know what that is. It's a soreness, I believe, on the outside of the elbow that comes from overuse of the elbow without proper training for it from playing a lot of golf. Maybe our listeners have also heard of tennis elbow. Same thing. That's where the soreness, the tenderness is on the inside of the elbow and resulting from the same reason, from overuse of the joint without proper exercise and care. So Ruffian is getting the care, at least, that he needs for his condition at Walking Paws Rehab, both from the laser surgery, from the nice fur pillow, and the also from, as we read in our final paragraph here, from underwater treadmill exercises that allowed him, the cat, to walk without as much pressure on his recovering elbow. So let's go into our second reading now, and this is going to be a time in the article when we pull back again, like we did in our second section yesterday, where we pull back from the specific context of Walking Paws Rehab in Colorado and look at instead the whole picture of this rise in pet popularity. So let's go into our second reading now.
Modern Family. The veterinarians at Walking Paws went through traditional veterinary education and then additional schooling to become rehabilitation certified. Some of the doctors went on to get specialty certifications in massage therapy and acupuncture as well, Wynn said. Researcher Irvine said the evolution of regarding pets as members of the family as opposed to the working animals they primarily used to be has resulted in people treating their animals more akin to children or siblings. Children in American households have declined in the last 20 years, but pet ownership has climbed steadily. According to the latest data from the American Pet Products Association, 70% of American households have a pet, up from 56% in 1988. Walking Paws Specialty Veterinary Services is an up-and-coming sector of the industry, Wynn said.
Okay, so we start off here still with a final note about the Walking Paws Rehab Center in Colorado. It describes how the veterinarians there, it talks about their training. Rhonda, what kind of training do the veterinarians get at Walking Paws?
Well, they go through traditional veterinary education, and then they have additional education, schooling, to become rehabilitation certified. So you have to become a veterinarian through the traditional way at first, and then you specialize in the therapy for recovery. Peter, you made a good point yesterday that when we, in American culture, when we talk about traditional medicine, we mean something very different than the historic ancient practices that we might talk about with that term in Asia. The native indigenous peoples of America, we might refer to their historic practices using plants, et cetera. We might refer to that as traditional medicine. However, in this article, they're comparing the usual medical treatments that are traditionally and commonly used. They're comparing that to these new business specialized practices for people who want to spend more money on their pets or are able to. So I think the traditional use of that word here needed a little explanation, right, Peter?
Yes. No, absolutely. I'm glad you mentioned it, that traditional veterinary education would not mean traditional medicine, folk remedies, that sort of thing. The author here means more, like you said, conventional or common scientific-based veterinary education. And then they get additional schooling in order to become rehabilitation certified. Some of them even go on to get specialty certifications in massage therapy and acupuncture as well. So kind of getting back to traditional medicine there,
yes,
in a
there
way.
There you go. That's interesting, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, with acupuncture.
This article really does say something about American medicine, doesn't it?
When
we discover when doctors start to use something like acupuncture, it's new to us.
New to us, but certainly not to a large part of the world.
Right.
And then in our second paragraph, we connect with researcher Irvine again. And there's just another way that the author is sort of going out of her way to be gender neutral with the terms here. Researcher Irvine from the University of Colorado said that the evolution of regarding pets as members of the family, as opposed to the working animals they primarily used to be, has resulted in people treating their animals how, Rhonda?
More akin to children or siblings, brothers and sisters. Akin is a lovely English word. It means very similar. Like this table is akin to a launching pad for a helicopter.
I don't know why that occurred
to me. But it's interesting. We have the English word kin, meaning your family.
Right.
If something is akin, it's very, very similar.
Yeah, no, and in fact, in rural Illinois, I'm sure, Rhonda, you've heard the term, as people talk about their family, they might say, oh, yeah, I have kin in the next town over.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
My cousin lives there, or my brother lives there, or something, or one of my children grew up. So we have kin over there, we have kin over here.
Now, we don't say that in rural Illinois. I'm smiling at Peter right now for our listeners because I think there are parts of America, more of maybe the South, the deep South, where they would say that. It's a little bit of a, if you say my kin folk, there's a little bit of a stereotype. I just tried to do that with my voice.
A stereotype of sort of rural.
Rural, Southern.
Southern. Yeah, I would agree with that. I grew up in and around New York City, so,
you think
New Yorkers, basically everything between New York and Hollywood is sort of rural America.
It's fun. It's a wonderful word. It is very regional specific. So if I said to my father when I go to visit him, what are your closest kin? He would kind of smile at me using that word. Here it doesn't have to do with human families. It's just a word that means very similar, treating their animals like members of the family.
Right, akin to children or siblings. And then that leads right into the next very profound report item in the next paragraph. Children in American households have declined in the last 20 years, but pet ownership has pet ownership has climbed steadily. According to the latest data from the American Pet Products Association, 70% of American households, more than two-thirds, have a pet, up from 56% in 1988, while at the same time, we don't have precise statistics, but I did look them up, 39% of households have, American households have a child under the age of 18 in the year 2025. That is compared to 54% who had a child in their household in the year 1975. So it is both a decline in children and an increase in pets. We could do a whole article just on that.
We could. I'm thinking there are probably a lot of sociological reasons that there is more pet ownership. I think that the whole history of where people live, where their economics, more opportunities to buy different breeds, maybe a small. I think there's so much behind this why more people are buying pets than before. Lots of thoughts.
We're, as viewers can see, we're almost out of time today, so we'll have to make these thoughts brief. But certainly I think, as you kind of indicated just now, that it has a lot to do with the general standard of living, the rise in the general standard of living, the rise in the middle class pretty much around the world, so that children who used to be considered a valuable asset for the sake of continuing the family line, for the sake of managing the farm, for the sake of providing labor for the family, basically, for the purpose of survival, not because they're forming some kind of company or something, some sort of capitalistic enterprise, but just to for the purposes of survival. For most of human history, children would have been valuable for that, as animals would have. And now both children and animals are becoming considered a luxury item. That the practical necessity for both children and animals is becoming less and less. And so their presence, it seems, is being considered to be more of, oh, well, if you would like a child or if you would like a pet, sure, but if you don't, that's fine too, because survival is no longer at stake. Children and animals, because we're no longer largely an agricultural society. Mm-hmm. We're mainly an information society now, or at least an industrial society. And children and animals are a luxury.
Peter, I think if we put you and Leslie Irvine from the University of Colorado Boulder, I think if we put you in the room with that sociology professor, you would have a great discussion.
It's entirely possible, although I'd like you to be on hand too as well, just keep us from getting too far off in the ether with our thoughts and everything. But with that, we have to bring our discussion to a close for today. We'd like to thank you, listeners, for joining with us in these 2 days on our pets article. We invite you to come back next time when we will have a new topic, a new article to read through and talk about, help you grow in your confidence in English. But for today, I'm Peter.
I'm Rhonda.
Saying bye-bye.
Goodbye.